It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Oh boy, oh boy. Hello, hello. Welcome, welcome, one and all. It is February 16th, 2022. And it is 1900 UTC. Sorry, I'm just making sure I say everything correctly and clearly. Because, oh golly, I sure do hate how I sound when I say February. Anyway, such is life. We'll just keep on a rolling. There is a lot of news today. Not too much death and destruction, but it's there. As is always the case, I've got a meeting at 1900 UTC in real time, so this is pre-recorded. I'll try and jump in calm if I can, but I do want to mention, hey, if you're joining and you're here and you're listening, thank you for being here. And if you want to talk and chat during the show, all you need to do is SSH over into calm. So you'll just SSH over to SDF. So SSH is your username at sdf.org. If you don't have a username, don't worry. Just do new, N-E-W. So SSH new at sdf.org, and you'll follow a sign-up process. It's really quick. You can get it done before the music, probably. And then from that, once you get that signed up, you just SSH over. And then once you're at the command prompt, run com. That's C-O-M. You press enter, and you'll press G for go to. And then you'll type anonradio, all lowercase, all one word. It's just like the website, anonradio.com. Not .com, but just anonradio. You press enter, and you'll be in the anonradio room. You press H for help if it gets confusing or you're new and you just forget what stuff does. But yeah, that's how that works. All right, well, let's go ahead and get started. We should start the way we pretty much always start, and that, my friends, is with
world news.
That's right. First up, we're in Canada. Dozens more graves found at former residential school sites. An Indigenous nation in Canada says it has discovered evidence of 54 unmarked graves at the site of two former residential schools in Saskatchewan. Kisikusi, I think that's how you say it. It's K-E-E-S-E-E-K-O-O-S-E. So I believe that's Kisikusi. First Nation said the graves were found near Fort Pelly in St. Philip's residential schools. It's the latest finding amid a wave that has triggered a national debate over the residential school system. Indigenous investigations across the country have found evidence of more than 1,100 graves since last spring. Just weeks ago, the Williams Lake First Nation announced it had found evidence of 93 unmarked graves on the grounds of St. Joseph Mission, a former residential school. These government-funded compulsory boarding schools were part of a policy meant to assimilate Indigenous children and destroy Indigenous cultures and languages. Some 150,000 First Nations, Métis, and Inuit children were taken from their families during this period and placed in these schools. Survivors had long testified that children died at the schools and were buried in unmarked plots, now being rediscovered throughout the country. Ted Kwazansi, project leader of the Kisikusi search, said ground-penetrating radar technology suggested there were 42 grave sites at the grounds of Fort Pelly Residential School and an additional 12 at St. Philip's. At a news conference on Tuesday, Mr. Kwazansi said the discovery matched testimony of residential school survivors. "It was not that they could not hear, but they did not believe our survivors," he said. Chief Lee Kichimonya said the wintry weather would delay the investigation on the site. "It's going to be a very tough time, knowing we have unmarked graves in our community where we walk every day, drive every day," he said. "We passed by them, never realizing that there were graves there." Fort Pelly was open as a residential school from 1905 to 1913. The St. Philip's building was used as a boarding house for students from 1902 to 1914. It was reopened in 1927 as a residential school, and like the majority of Canada's residential schools, was run by the Roman Catholic Church. More than 130 residential schools were operating in Canada between 1874 and 1996. The United States has a similar program with lots and lots of, probably many, many more, orders of magnitude more, unfortunately. The United States has been real quiet about that. And instead, hey, let's go start a war. We don't need to talk about our past. Okay, here. We're going to play a short 30-second song to wipe that sadness out of my mouth.
She got lips like stereo, with the bass and treble down. She got tits like microwave, burritos that explode. What I wouldn't give to see her pee between two parked cars on a well-lit street. Fifth and Main.
All right, that was no effects. See her pee. I find the description of the woman that he would like to see pee between two parked cars on Fifth and Main to be very graphic, and it always helps clear my mind. Or not always, but it frequently will help me clear my mind because I picture that woman so clearly. Well, let's talk about death and destruction again. In Brazil, mudslides from torrential rains kill at least 58 people. The death toll from devastating mudslides and floods that swept through a mountainous region of Rio de Janeiro state has reached 58, local authorities said Wednesday. The Petropolis was slammed by a deluge on Tuesday, and Mayor Rubens Bom Tempo said the number of dead could rise as searchers picked through the wreckage. 21 people had been recovered alive. Oh man, that's got to be a traumatic experience. Wake up buried in mud and somehow survive. Civilians joined the official recovery efforts early Wednesday. Among them were Priscilla Neves and her siblings, who looked through the mud for any sign of their disappeared parents, but found only clothing. Neves told the Associated Press she had given up hope of finding her parents alive. And Rosaline Virgilio, 49, was in tears as she recalled the desperate pleas from someone she couldn't save. There was a woman screaming, "Help! Get me out of here!" But we couldn't do anything. The water was gushing out. The mud was gushing out. Our city, unfortunately, is finished. Petropolis is a German-influenced city named for former Brazilian emperor. Nestled in the mountains above the coastal metropolis for almost two centuries, it has been a refuge for people escaping summer heat and tourists keen to explore the so-called Imperial City. So, yeah, if that's not something to have nightmares about. All right, well, let's go over to Africa, where death and destruction, yep, still on the menu. Several killed in Mogadishu as Al-Shabaab attacks police stations. Al-Shabaab fighters have attacked several police stations and security checkpoints in Somalia's capital of Mogadishu. Officials and the armed group said a show of force as the country prepares to hold a long-delayed presidential election. State television on Wednesday reported that five people, including two children, were killed in two attacks, one at a police station in Kata district and another at a target in the Daru Salam district. The Al-Qaeda-linked group carries out frequent attacks against the government and last week attacked a minibus carrying election delegates. The group's military operations spokesman, Abdiasis Abu Masab, said fighters hit government targets in four districts in Mogadishu and another area on its outskirts. He said the fighters overran government bases and seized military vehicles and weapons. It was not immediately possible to verify those claims. This is coming to us from Al Jazeera. Internal Security Minister Abdullahi Noor wrote on Twitter early on Wednesday, "The terrorists attacked the suburbs of Mogadishu and targeted our police stations and checkpoints. Our security defeated the enemy." A witness who visited the scene of an attack on the Kata police station told Reuters news agency that the building was destroyed, along with nearby houses. Resident Halima Farag told Reuters the explosion sounded like an earthquake, and she and her family fled their home in fear. So, a months-long dispute between Prime Minister Mohamed Hussein Robo and his political rival, President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed, has been blamed for the delayed presidential elections. So, well wishes to all the people in Somalia. Hopefully, we can get some elections done and get some stability back over there. So that's pretty heavy. And, well, sometimes you can die. Even Mother Nature will kill you. Swimmer dies in first fatal shark attack in Sydney since 1963. A swimmer has been killed after sustaining catastrophic injuries in the first fatal shark attack in Sydney since 1963. Emergency services were called to Little Bay Beach near Malabar on Wednesday afternoon, where human remains were found in the water. Authorities in New South Wales state have not named the victim, and an investigation is underway. Little Bay and several nearby beaches are now closed. At the time of the attack, which was 16:30 local time, or 05:30 GMT, there were dozens of people swimming, paddleboarding, and fishing on the nearby rocks. Some guy was swimming and a shark came and attacked him, one witness told 9 News. We heard a yell and turned around. It looked like a car had landed in the water, he said. Another onlooker, who was fishing on the rocks at the time, told ABC News that the swimmer was yelling at first and then he went down. There were so many splashes. He just went down for a swim enjoying the day, but that shark took his life. New South Wales ambulances said the patient had suffered catastrophic injuries and there was nothing paramedics could do. Since earlier in the story they described it as they found floating bits of human remains, I'm thinking he was probably in pieces whenever he got to the shore. The police said the beach would remain closed while officers searched the area. The police also urged people to be careful on beaches and follow the safety guidance from Surf Life Saving NSW. The guidance says beachgoers should swim between the red and yellow flags at locations that are patrolled, avoid swimming at dawn, dusk, and night, avoid swimming at river mouths or in murky, discolored waters, and avoid swimming in or around schools of baitfish. The last fatal shark attack on Sydney Beach was in 1963 at Sugarloaf Bay. Last year, there were 3 fatal shark attacks in Australia, including 2 in New South Wales, according to the Tauranga Conservation Society. So, sharks can be dangerous. Ugh. Very, very troubling. All right. Well, there's so much going on.
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
Yeah. Let's do this. This story is kind of a little bit longer, but I'll just give you kind of a few of the highlights because I think this is helpful and helps make sense of the news and other things, right? This is a little older, but I figured it's worth going through real quick. So what is NATO? NATO is the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. It's a military alliance formed in 1949 by 12 countries, the U.S., Canada, the U.K., and including the U.S., Canada, the U.K., and France. Members agree to come to one another's aid in the event of an armed attack against any member state. Its aim was originally to counter the threat of post-war Russian expansion in Europe, even though Russia kind of helped win the war. In 1955, Soviet Russia responded to NATO by creating its own military alliance of Eastern European communist countries called the Warsaw Pact. Following the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, a number of former Warsaw Pact countries became NATO members. The alliance now has 30 members. So, Ukraine is a former Soviet republic bordering both Russia and the EU. It's not a NATO member, but it is a partner country. This means that there's an understanding that it may be allowed to join the alliance sometime in the future. Russia wants assurances that from Western powers this won't happen. However, the U.S. is refusing to bar Ukraine from NATO, saying that as a sovereign nation, it should be free to decide on its own security alliances. So, there's a nice map. Let me see. You know what I'm going to do? I will use the tx0.org link shortener. So it'll just take a second for that to load. That site always takes a while to load up for me. All right, while that's loading, I'll give you a link to a map that is pretty helpful. I think it's helpful. Here it is. It's TX0, so that's Tango X-ray 0, the number 0, .org/TT. So Tango. So TX0.org/TT. And if you go there, you will see a nice little map of Europe, and it's showing us, the thing that it's showing us here are the countries that joined since or after 1997. All right, so what else is Russia worried about? Well, Putin claims Western powers are using the alliance to surround Russia, and he wants NATO to cease its military activities in Eastern Europe. He's long argued the U.S. broke a guarantee it made in 1990 that NATO would not expand eastward. NATO rejects Russia's claims and says only a small number of its member states share borders with Russia, and that it is a defensive alliance. Many believe the current buildup of Russian troops on the Ukrainian border may be an attempt to force the West to take Russia's security demands seriously. We talked about that recently, how they were surrounding Ukraine. U.S. Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, has said Russia would pay a serious and dear price for invading and is sending reinforcements to Europe. The United States is sending nearly 3,000 extra troops to Poland and Romania to bolster Eastern European defenses, and another 8,500 combat-ready troops are put on alert. The Pentagon says they would only be deployed if NATO decides to activate a rapid reaction force. There are no plans to deploy troops in Ukraine itself. So, so that's kind of what's going on. There's disagreement because Russia wants to expand, of course, but Russia would really like to have NATO go back to what NATO was, when it was formed, and leave all the Baltic states alone and not be part of this alliance. And they're kind of like, nah, that's okay. So anyway, my head. You're a migraine from bad brains. It's off a record, sorry.
Anon Radio is your non-commercial, non-profit, member-supported underground radio station.
Powered by the HDF Public Access Unix System.
That's right. You're listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF. And SDF, well, that's powered by you, my friend. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in and being here. If you're listening live or listening off the archive, thank you so much. You help make SDF and Anon Radio better. So thanks for being here. All right, so there's a lot going on, and there was another shark story. I meant to read it alongside the shark attack, but I skipped it, so sorry about that. New Zealand. Scientists discover rare baby ghost shark. And I guess it's not discover, more as they found another one. New Zealand scientists have discovered a rare baby ghost shark, a little-known species of fish that lives in the shadowy depths of the ocean. Ghost sharks, also known as chimera, are rarely spotted, and sightings of their young are even more uncommon. The newly hatched shark was collected at a depth of about 1.2 kilometers underwater near the South Island. I'm glad they let us know it was an underwater fish they found. Scientists say the find deepens understandings of the juvenile stage of the species. Calling it a neat find, Dr. Britt Finucci, a member of the team, said the discovery was made by accident while conducting a research trawl of underwater populations. Deep water species are generally hard to find, and like ghost sharks in particular, they tend to be quite cryptic, she told the BBC, so we just don't see them very often. The scientists from the National Institute of Water and Atmospheric Research believe the baby shark had recently hatched as its belly was still full of egg yolk. Aww. The embryos of ghost sharks develop in egg capsules laid on the seafloor, and they feed off the yolk until they're ready to hatch. Dr. Finucci said the young ghost sharks can exhibit different characteristics from their adult version, which makes the discovery more significant. Juveniles can live in very different habitats. They have different diets. They can even look very different from adults. Coming across the juvenile helps us better understand the biology and some of the ecology of the species. Dr. Fanucci said their first step would be to find out the baby shark's species. We'll take a little tissue sample and random genetics, she said. Then we'll do a whole bunch of morphometrics, or body measurements, as well, which will also help us assess what species we're looking at. Dr. Fanucci sounds like a pretty cool person. They use very relaxed language. Ghost sharks are not actually sharks, but a species of fish closely related to sharks and rays. They're cartilaginous, meaning their skeletons are primarily composed of cartilage, which gives them an eerie, ethereal quality. Most species of ghost shark inhabit the deep sea, although a handful prefer to live in shallow coastal waters. So, very interesting. I thought that was kind of cool. All right, let's talk about some medicine and science. We've got about 10 minutes to go before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe starts up. That, my friends, I've been saying my friend a lot, but Dubious Goals Committee is a fun time. Tobe's been having a rough time with doctors and all of that jazz, but so I hope there's a show today. if not, Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe is always a good time and lots of fun. Even though the show's been going on for a long, long time, a number of years, every single day at 1930 UTC. So unless you are tuning into a non-radio every single day, you're bound to have missed some of them. And a lot of times the reruns are a lot of fun. So either way, please stick around. Sorry, I just had to throw an ad for Tobe in there. All right, NATO. We're talking about science real quick. BioNTech is going to ship mRNA vaccine factory kits to Africa. Germany's biotechnology company BioNTech has developed a vaccine factory made from shipping containers. The company plans to ship to Africa as assembly kits to ease what the World Health Organization has described as huge disparities in global COVID-19 access. Vaccine access, I guess. Everyone has great access to the virus, not so much the vaccine. The factory prototype will be instrumental in helping the biotech firm deliver on a pledge made last year to Rwanda, South Africa, Senegal, and the African Union to secure mRNA vaccine production on the continent, where inoculation rates have fallen far behind the rest of the world. On the first mRNA manufacturing facility in the African Union is due to begin in mid-2022, which will be followed by the delivery of the first container in Africa during the second half of the year, BioNTech said in a statement. The factory is housed in two groups of six 40-foot containers, and it should kick off vaccine production about 12 months after the delivery of the unit. This is the beginning of the Vaccine Equity Project for Africa. With this project, the African Union is aiming that by 2024, 60% of the vaccines used on the continent would be produced on the continent. The European Union fully supports that goal. Together with our member states and financial institutions, we have committed over 1 billion euros in financing to strengthen regulatory frameworks and transfer skills and know-how, because regional capacities are the cornerstone of good public health. And I think this is kind of neat, just because I don't know. The cynic in me wants to, or the person who doubts this kind of stuff, I always think, you know, because the world would really love to exploit Africa, but suddenly it's come across this thing where it's like, oh, you have to, we can't, if we exploit you all the time, then we can't dependably, you won't stay alive. So here's some medicine. I don't know. It's just a very interesting relationship the rest of the world seems to have with Africa. African countries. I hope that can level out and we just get some normalized stuff out of there, but who knows? Here's some other news that's pretty cool. HIV, first woman in the world believed to be cured of the virus. Cured, we say. A U.S. patient is believed to be the third person in the world and the first woman to be cured of HIV. The patient was being treated for leukemia when she received a stem cell transplant from someone with natural resistance to the AIDS-causing virus. The woman has now been free of the virus for 14 months, but experts say the transplant method used, involving umbilical cord blood, is too risky to be suitable for most people with HIV. The patient's case was presented at a medical conference in Denver on Tuesday and is the first time that this method is known to have been used as a functional cure for HIV. The patient received a transplant of umbilical cord blood as part of her cancer treatment and has since not needed to take the antiretroviral therapy required to treat HIV. case was part of a larger U.S. study of people living with HIV who had received the same type of blood transplant to treat cancer and serious diseases. Scientists believe the immune system of recipients can develop resistance to HIV as a result. So this is really cool, and hopefully it moves us closer and closer to getting rid of or eradicating HIV. That'd be really cool. Oh yeah, here, check this out.
What's wrong with having a good for a change? Now they're going to let us have a good if we just help them. They're going to leave us alone. Let us make some money. You can have a little taste of that good life too. Now I know you want it. Hell, everybody does.
You do it to your own kind.
What's the threat? We all sell out every day. Might as well be on a winning team.
Hell yeah, that's Judas and the Morning After Pill from Good Riddance. That song and that intro always really get my... Anyway, I really like that. I love that beginning. Because it kind of reminds us all, you know? just by existing in this capitalist system, we're really, you know, we're selling out... You're selling out somebody just by existing. Let's talk about avocados. Real quick, Mexican president accuses the U.S. of inventing plot to ban his country's avocados. There's something else behind it. The president, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, has suggested U.S. President Joe Biden and his administration conspired to ban the importation of Mexican avocados in an attempt to boost sales for U.S. farmers. So whether or not that's true, we'll find out eventually. All right, there's about 2 minutes to go. If this starts on time, so I'll just leave you with a domestic story. Renters across the U.S. are facing sharp increases, averaging up to 40% in some cases. Rental prices across America have soared over the past year, with some cities experiencing average price hikes up to 40%, leaving many renters stunned and grappling with either to have to move or pay significantly more of their income to remain in their homes. Joshua Beadle of Sarasota, Florida, lived in a 950-square-foot apartment for 4 years for $900 a month. And then a year ago, the owner sold the building, and he was forced to move. He found a 700-square-foot apartment for $1,500 a month. After living there a year, he received a lease renewal letter that it was going up to $1,947. Over the course of 1 year, my rent has increased 116%. How does someone who works gigs and is making the same amount of money afford a price increase of $1,050 a month? Every month that I pay my rent, I breathe a sigh of relief knowing I can live one more month. According to an analysis conducted by Redfin, rents in the U.S. jumped 14% in December to $1,877. Some of the most affected cities include Austin, that's where I live, with a 40% increase in rental prices, New York City at 35%, and Florida exceeding 30% in rental prices. So yeah, really sucks. I would speculate that it's involved with all of the commercial entities, all these LLCs, big corporations, buying up large swaths of property and then renting it out. Surprise, surprise. Be homeless. Pay up or be homeless.
Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.